This is a podcast from Consilio. We bring people together to create better places.
Hello and welcome to Poles Apart, a fortnightly podcast from Consilio where we look at the major political, property and planning developments from across the capital. I'm Luke Francis, a former Labour Party advisor.
And I'm Nathan Parsad-Wyatt, a former Conservative Party advisor.
And welcome to episode three.
We made it.
They said we wouldn't do it.
They said we shouldn't do it, actually.
Oh, yeah. No, that was what. Yeah, you're right. But we are. And we got an email this week.
We did. We had an email saying that we were the 14th most listened to podcast in government and politics. Bit sceptical. Makes me wonder how many people must listen to the 15th most listened to podcast in government and politics.
But if you're here and listening, thank you.
Yeah, well done. You're one of the five people. No. But today is all going to be about the West End. So what's the current state of it and what does the future hold for this globally renowned district? Later in the podcast, we're going to be joined by Councillor Matthew Green, Cabinet Member for Business Planning and Licensing in the City of Westminster, and Jace Tyrrell, Chief Executive Officer of the new West End Company. And we're hoping they're going to share their views on the current challenges and opportunities facing the West End. But before we get to that, we'd like to start the podcast by talking about some news that's caught our eye. So Luke, your stories of the week.
Yeah, my first story of the week is Sadiq Khan calling for more powers to be devolved to City Hall so that he can implement a rent freeze in the capital, which, depending on your preferred news outlet, is either a £3,000 saving for renters over the next 2 years or a £15,000 bill for landlords over the next 2 years.
Yeah, very much depending on your perspective, that one. But it's not the first time that Sadiq Khan has called for rent control, and I suppose, given the current cost of living challenges, it's not a bad political issue to go on.
No, not at all. I remember when we were working on his selection back in 2015, that was one of the things he campaigned on, so it shouldn't be a massive surprise. And actually with the cost of living crisis and spiralling rents, you know, it does make sense, and I'm sure it will resonate with a lot of people, especially with half an eye on the local elections coming up in May. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that progresses and how the government responds to his request.
Well, I imagine they probably won't respond, to be honest, because it's not one of the it's not one of the powers that the mayor currently has, and I can't imagine that the government is keen to give it to him anytime soon. So they probably just won't respond. And but anyway, an interesting story nonetheless.
And then the other one that caught my eye today was the sanctioning of Roman Abramovich. And as a Chelsea fan, it's big news, but actually, you know, nationally, it's a big step from the government. You know, there was a real call for him to be sanctioned as a prominent Russian oligarch in the capital, and what that means both for, you know, Chelsea Football Club, but actually more widely for, you know, UK property markets and London's property market. It'll be interesting to see what the fallout is.
Yeah, I mean, we should say we're recording this on the evening of Thursday, the 10th of March. So by the time this goes out next week, who knows what would have happened. But it is interesting that the government was fairly criticised, weren't they, early on for not acting enough on sanctioning individuals that were close to the sort of Putin regime.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it seems that they've spent that time figuring out various legal mechanisms to hit him hard. So anyway,
let's see what happens.
So to the West End, I think it's fairly safe to say that Oxford Street and the surrounding area has been particularly hard hit during the pandemic. We all remember the eerie images of a West End with not a person in sight and shops and restaurants shuttered up. And there were a number of reports out last year just detailing how London was disproportionately hardest hit by a reduction in footfall. And I think this was the perfect storm of much of the cultural offering being closed, all the theatres in the West End, as well as restaurants, shops and, of course, international travel being banned, basically, so no tourists. But it does feel like we're edging back to some sort of normality. I mean, footfall has been climbing, and it is noticeably busier, just anecdotally, than it has been. So the question really is, are we just seeing, you know, did the pandemic just accelerate some of the long-term challenges that were already facing retail, and particularly Oxford Street? I mean, pre-pandemic, just from our point of view, we had a number of clients who were looking at big retail spaces and thinking about what else they might be able to do with them, and the need for that kind of quantum of retail square footage was just not there anymore. And I think the pandemic has just moved a lot of that along. But in kind of the shock of the pandemic, if you like, it feels as though there were a lot of businesses that are just obviously gone. And that has left a huge gap I think, in the identity of the area. And just last week, Councillor Rachel Robethon, the leader of Westminster City Council, said that Oxford Street is Europe's hardest hit street. She said it saw an average decline in footfall of 71% at the height of the pandemic. And both she and her cabinet colleagues have criticised the fact that Oxford Street seems to now just be sort of swamped with US-style candy stores and tourist hat shops.
I was shocked when I walked down a couple of weeks ago. I haven't been to Oxford Street for quite a long time, actually. I'm part of the problem.
Well, that says it all, really.
But I was genuinely quite taken aback at the number of sort of, clearly not long-term occupiers, sweet shops, mobile phone covers, vape shops, things that don't feel particularly in keeping with the sort of history and identity of the district.
Yeah, and I think if there was ever a more sort of visual representation of how far that's gone, it's the old HMV store being turned into an American-style tap shop. I mean, candy shop. And I think, that may not be what we need. But it isn't all bad news. We've had, we've worked on a number of projects. The transformation of the House of Fraser building that's going to see, a nice rooftop restaurant and, some office space and retail at ground floor. We've got IKEA that are moving into the former Topshop HQ, the Elizabeth Line opening. And I mean, we'll talk to Jace a little bit later, but the new West End company alongside Colliers recently did a report that sort of forecast pre-pandemic levels of spend to nearly $10 billion by 2024. And I think it'll be interesting just to chat to Jace later about, what might need to happen to the district in order to achieve that kind of level of spend, because presumably there are some changes that need to occur, and you're not going to get that with a bunch of candy stores.
Yeah.
But I think it's clear that sort of everyone, be they residents, politicians and businesses, all want the West End to survive. And I think everybody's looking at what they can do to ensure this is the case. Both of the major political parties have been talking about the issue fairly frequently. I mean, Councillor Jeff Barraclough, who is the sort of shadow cabinet member for planning in Westminster, Labour member, pointed out, I think it was last year or the year before, that we're all custodians of the West End and everyone wants it to survive. So there's definitely cross-party support for it.
Yep,
I think, absolutely. And last month, Westminster unveiled, I think, £150 million to upgrade parts of the West End, and including, Oxford Street widening of pavements and changing traffic flows, not without its controversy, and will be difficult with, ensuring that everybody is kind of moving along in the right direction with that. But I suppose more than just kind of policy changes and warm words, what is the future actually going to be? Lots of ink has been spilled on making the West End more of an experiential offer, more experience-based economy, somewhere where people come to do things rather than to buy things necessarily.
Yep.
So I think we need to look at how developers, residents, businesses, landlords, tenants, politicians and everyone really come together to ensure the West End can actually look confidently ahead to the future. So those are current, some of the themes we're going to be exploring with our guests as we go through. So let's put these and some of those questions to our guests. And we're delighted to welcome Councillor Matthew Green, Cabinet Member for Business, Planning and Licensing in the City of Westminster, to discuss these issues facing the West End. So welcome to you, Matthew.
Hello.
Before we begin, could I just ask you to say a few words in relation to the ongoing situation in Ukraine, a country I know is very close to your heart?
Well, thanks, Nathan, and thanks, Luke, for that opportunity. I lived and I worked in Ukraine for 3 years, and although I'm clearly thousands of miles away from the fighting, I still have friends and former colleagues in the country. And I think that we all need to stand shoulder to shoulder with Ukraine at this time of unprovoked Russian aggression. And I think that what's actually been really inspiring, the silver lining to this very, very dark cloud, is the spirit of resilience that we're seeing from the Ukrainian people. And I think people, unlike myself, who haven't had as much time in contact with Ukrainians, have been really inspired by their tenacity in the face of this marauding aggressor. All I can say is Slava Ukraini, glory to Ukraine.
Absolutely.
absolutely. So in the first part of the podcast, Luke and I were discussing some of the issues facing the West End, particularly the proliferation of American candy stores and tourist shops along Oxford Street. And I know in recent weeks, both you and the leader of Westminster have spoken about this. But taking the West End sort of more broadly, what do you consider from a Westminster perspective to be the sort of major challenges?
Well, I think in order to address some of those challenges, we actually need to see a full-scale transformation of the West End. Policy, both national and local, has for far too long been far too restrictive on ground floor use, with a focus on retail only. And while we absolutely need to retain our active frontages, this needs to be expanded so it includes hospitality and leisure and other offerings that complement retail. We need to have those one-of-a-kind, unique offerings on the high street, and in particular, new experiential venues. So I don't know whether either of you have been to Piccadilly Circus recently, but we recently had the Green Planet artificial reality experience, where the Crown Estate had worked with BBC Earth. So you could go on this journey into a kingdom of plants with a virtual David Attenborough. And that was a really successful use of an empty unit, which is actually, in fact, the old Tower Records. And it didn't actually take much work. It was just some white boxing and paint, and then everything else was done through your handset that you saw there. And I think that was a great success. And it's over now. And so if you didn't go, you missed it. And I think we need more of those. We think we need more of those moments in time. We need to obviously know you're both young people. I'm sure that you're petrified of missing out on absolutely anything. And so we obviously need to tap into that to help bring people back into the West End. And if you did miss it, you can now go to Piccadilly Circus still. The council there is making use of the former Barclays Bank unit underneath the Piccadilly Lights. And there we're working with Landsec and the Heart of London BID. And there's now a pop-up gallery there as part of our pop-up programme that has an exhibition of photos of celebrities aimed at raising awareness of mental health. And so I think that's part of the council's pop-up programme, and that's been really successful in this respect because we've done a series of interventions with artists and performers where they took over empty spaces, adding that diverse and curious element to the West End, and just making those vacant spaces vibrant again. And this pop-up art programme, along with our Westminster Reveals campaign, recently won a top prize in an LGA award programme. We've also more recently delivered some pop-up retail concept stores on Oxford Street and Regent Street, and we brought wellness brands and fashion brands together, and they all had a focus on sustainability, which I thought was great. And we want to transition these brands now into full-time occupiers, so using the pop-ups as incubators. But also the advantage of pop-ups is that they have this relatively rapid rotation of merchants, and that's another way to try and bring people back to the West End, as it then kind of matches and I hope actually exceeds the kind of fast-moving environment that you get online. So I'd love to see Selfridges or some of the other major players embracing this approach and outside of their main stores, using some units on Oxford Street to incubate this next generation of talent. And of course, I would like them to use those units that are currently occupied by candy stores. And look, there are some high quality candy stores out there. So don't get me wrong. I'm not all candy. Yeah. But the ones that we've seen mushrooming up in the Oxford Street area, most recently taking over the HMV store, which I think was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, there's something iconic about the HMV store, and now it's a relatively low quality American candy shop. And ultimately, I don't think that so many candy stores can bring anything positive to Oxford Street. And yeah, of course, businesses don't want to take on the business rate liability of empty shops. And I understand that. And that's why the council's campaigning to replace at least part of business rates with an online sales tax. But letting to candy stores I think it's just massively myopic. In the end, you'll just see the value of rents and properties fall. And what we don't want is a vicious spiral that's circling ever downwards, both in terms of quality and in terms of value.
I think, you know, it's an interesting point you make of sort of pop-ups and experiential offers acting as incubators for hopefully something that then develops into a more sort of long-term offer, which, you know, clearly is what most landlords would want, is something that's going to provide them an income for a longer period of time. Do you understand why it is that some landlords might be tempted to just go with these kind of, you know, candy store offers or these things, just because of the certainty of income over a period of time?
Of course I do. And, you know, who sings for the songbird? And we have to realise that, especially Oxford Street, it's not like Regent Street, where you have a single owner, the Crown Estate. And last time I checked, Her Majesty the Queen wasn't short of a bob or two. But I think we're in a situation there. If you have a single unit on Oxford Street, you clearly, probably the bank's breathing down your neck. You clearly need to make those mortgage payments, which on a building like that in Oxford Street would be considerable. But I think people just do have to think in a bit more, be a bit more long-termist. And certainly the pop-ups program, because because the council can operate those on the community rate, which saves you 70 pence the pound on the business rate. I know that we've been relying on landlords to give us those units for free, but I think that ultimately they add to the overall vibrancy of the street. And I do think that it's a massively self-inflicted wound to let to so many candy shops. All I would ask is just that businesses hold on a little, that landlords hold on a little bit longer, see if they can get a better long-term operator in there. And if they can't, that they talk to us at the council and see if we can work with them to put a pop-up in, or work with neighbouring businesses. Because neighbouring businesses, as I said, like the last thing Selfridges wants is to be surrounded by a sea of candy stores. Maybe they can work with neighbouring properties to do pop-ups, to use them as event spaces, so that essentially it adds to the value of their main property rather than decreases it.
I mean, I think that part of the challenge, I suppose, for a lot of developers is having the right quality of space to attract the best operators who might be there for the long term. And I think that's why we've seen, department stores, putting in planning applications to diversify their offer and improve their space and make changes. I mean, we've seen that in a number of stores, particularly along Oxford Street. Do you sort of welcome this change from the sort of traditional department store with large retail space and sort of, you know, does the council sort of support that move to diversifying these buildings to provide high quality space to attract the best global tenants?
Well, as I said at the beginning, I think we do actually need a complete full-scale transformation of Oxford Street. And the department stores that we knew and loved, they do absolutely need to change. And I have seen department stores putting in planning applications to have that diversification, to put in gyms, to put in other leisure opportunities, to add to that F&B. And also some of the problems that we have on Oxford Street is some of the units are just too big. We as a council, we ran a pop-up with 10 fashion and wellness brands at 500 Oxford Street that was in the old new look flagship store. And, you know, even with 10 brands, we ended up having to white box off about two-thirds of the space. It's just simply too large. So, again, I think, and I know that not everybody has the money to invest in their properties, but I think that now is the time, because, of course, if you put your an empty unit into development, that you're not liable for business rates. I think that some landlords need to be looking at their spaces, see if they need to be changed, dividing them up into smaller spaces. Because I think that the days when I'm an unusually shaped person and find it very difficult to find clothes that fit me. In the old days, when you couldn't find it in your local high street, you would go to Oxford Street because you knew that they had the full range. They had the size 12 shoes. They had everything else that unusually shaped people need. But now, of course, you just get it online and pick it up at either have it delivered to your home or pick it up at your local store. So I think the need for those really big units that had absolutely the full range of retail offerings are no longer there. So we have to think about how we use those spaces.
And you sort of talk about the complete transformation of Oxford Street. And I think everyone can see the need for that. Who should lead that, and how can planning or even licensing policy assist developers and tenants in achieving this aim?
Well, I think, we need to obviously work collaboratively with the businesses. I think that the pop-ups that Westminster City Council has delivered have been fantastic. And if you'd have gone into them, you wouldn't have thought that they'd been led by a local authority. But probably that someone like Selfridges, I keep name-checking Selfridges, but other businesses like that would be in a better place to lead that. So we have to work together. And we essentially want to do the pop-ups to show landlords and other businesses that it can be done, that it can work on Oxford Street and Regent Street. And hopefully those can be used as, I want those to be templates that other businesses can do, that landlords can draw inspiration from in terms of how they organise their space. But it absolutely has to be a collaboration. And I know that you're talking to Jace Tyrrell after this, and we've worked really closely with New West End Company. We work closely with all the bids. We recognise the scale of the challenge. And because it is such a large challenge, we absolutely need to work on it together.
Are you optimistic about the future of the West End?
Well, it may sound as if I've been a complete pessimist on this, but I'm absolutely not. And I think that there's we're actually looking forward, and we're seeing new occupiers coming to the West End, like IKEA. That's a big name get for Oxford Circus. And just after recording this podcast, I'm going to Paddington Green, where Gymshark is holding a recruitment event for its new flagship store on Regent Street. And so we're really excited about that opening, and also that they're committed to recruiting locally. That's actually something that we've seen a lot more of since the pandemic, is that that businesses want to engage with local communities and really have them part of what they're doing. And frankly, post-COVID and back in the world of tube strikes, it's great to have your employees locally. We've also got Uniqlo and Theory flagships opening on Regent Street very soon. So it is actually an exciting time. And so don't think that my rant on candy stores means that I'm entirely pessimistic. I think that there is a lot to look forward to on Oxford Street and Regent Street.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
While I've got you, I just want to ask you one last question about one of the biggest challenges, I think, facing the planning and development industry at the moment, and that is the ongoing debate around demolition versus retrofit. And I think, we all acknowledge the need for the development community to play its part in resolving the climate emergency and reducing emissions across the piece. But there are simply some cases where current buildings won't be able to be refurbished if we want to attract those global tenants that we're just talking about, if we want to make those spaces not just candy stores, but highly desirable to the international operators. How would you advise developers to sort of make that case in that situation?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily always advise them to make that case. Because you know, Nathan, Westminster declared a climate emergency in 2019. And last year we co-produced our climate action plan with residents. Even before that, though, our city plan was very clear that we want developers to avoid that higher carbon footprint associated with constructing new buildings. And ideally, and I say ideally, we want people to use their existing buildings more efficiently. And that involves adapting them and adding to them where necessary. But I also recognise that this isn't always possible. What I do think, though, is that that developers need to realise that this should be a last resort. And I do think sometimes some have come to me and to the council, and they've made up their minds before they thoroughly investigated whether retrofit will work. And that's usually because they want to sweat the assets by building a larger building. And often that ends up one that's being too tall and too bulky. So it's just going against policy on so many levels. And, you know, we know that we want to attract new investors into Westminster. And that's why we launched our Westminster Investment Service. And we want to bring these businesses in from abroad or elsewhere in the UK. We want to smooth their path as new entrances. And that does mean helping them through the planning process, the licensing process, but everything else, waste, recycling, last mile logistics, employment, especially through our fantastic Westminster Employment Services at Council. But it can't just always be about demolition and rebuilding. You know, I have developers coming to me now wanting to demolish buildings that are less than 20 years old. That just doesn't seem right. But in those rare cases, and I do think that they should be rarer and rarer as time goes on, we need, when there is no alternative to demolition, we want to see developers use those elements of construction that have the most embedded carbon, such as steel. We want them to see them use them again. And that any building that is replacing the demolished building, it needs to aim for those really innovative levels of energy efficiency and sustainability. And the thing is that this is what residents want too. You may know we recently launched our early community engagement guidance, and that's really important in the way that developers talk to residents, not only in what kind of bit of building is going to go up in the area that they know best, but whether or not retrofit versus demolition is the right choice for them. And that's really important in Westminster because we have so many heritage assets and heritage assets that are really well-loved by the local community.
Absolutely. Well, Matthew Green, Councillor Green, thank you very much for joining us today, and look forward to speaking to you very soon. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Great, and we're now joined by Jace Tyrrell, Chief Executive of New West End Company. Jace, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be with you guys.
So, Jace, perhaps for those who don't know, do you just want to start by explaining sort of what New West End Company actually is and your role in sort of supporting West End?
Well, I hope your listeners will know the best bit of the Monopoly board, which, of course, is Bond Street, Oxford Street and Regent Street. So all they need to know is that we represent the most brilliant businesses that own the property there and have the businesses operating in those streets. So everything from Prada to Primark to the luxury hotels to McDonald's. And we bring all those interests together, 600 businesses, and deliver a whole range of services and also advocate and promote the district on their behalf, operating now for 20 years. And we just got our mandate renewed with 99.5% of our businesses voting in favour. So a North Korean victory by any political standard.
Absolutely. And congratulations on a successful bid renewal. We were discussing earlier in the podcast sort of how badly the West End was impacted by the pandemic. And, you know, as I said earlier, we sort of remembered all of those images of a very quiet West End, which is a bit alien to all of us who love its vibrancy. What's the picture now? Are people back? Has footfall returned? Is it buzzing again?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly turned a corner. And I think before Christmas, we all got hugely excited because suddenly we were getting sort of 70-80% back on pre-COVID, which was pretty significant given where we'd been for the last couple of years. But obviously, Omicron knocked a bit of confidence off that. But I have to say, the last couple of weeks, we're getting right back to sort of 70-80% footfall. Sales are actually getting to 80-90%, which is pretty remarkable. So look, we were 10 billion turnover pre-COVID. We're about 7.5 billion this year. So all the indicators are it's coming back. Slow burn, though, not big bang, I would say.
Sure. And do you know who those people are? Are they tourists coming back? Are these people returning to the office? Is this domestic tourism? You know, who are these people?
Yeah, it's really interesting because the shift, which I think has happened in most big global cities around the world, is the rise of the domestic customer. So we had a huge influx of domestic tourists, which was great, obviously, for all of our businesses, retail, theatre, restaurants. But office workers are returning. And actually, I saw a report the other week that the West End has the highest office return than anywhere in the capital. And I think that is the mix that supports the offices with the retail, leisure and the culture. And we are seeing some tourists. You know, we're seeing some Europeans back, some Americans. But second half of the year, the forecast with the hotels and the airlines, very strong. It's our big Platinum Jubilee year. The Americans love everything that's royal. So long may that demand continue in the second half and really get us bouncing again with those tourists to support, obviously, the domestic customers coming back.
Absolutely. And I wanted to ask you about a recent report that I think you did jointly with Colliers, which sort of said that West End spend is predicted to recover to its historic sort of 10 billion turnover within the next couple of years. Is this something that's just going to happen now that we're sort of, you know, getting out of COVID and things are heading back to normal? Or is this something that's going to require significant public and private sector investment in order to achieve? Was it a prediction, or is it something that's a prediction caveated on lots of different things happening?
Very much the latter. So it was great to work with Colliers, and they looked at some of the big macro trends, looking at the Elizabeth line, the return to the office, and what's happening in retail and leisure. But there's a low, a medium, and a high scenario. And actually, you know, we did the middle road with our forecast. There's obviously some macro pieces that we can't sort of influence too much, but there's certainly some stuff on the ground. You talk about that partnership, you know, with Westminster Council and business coming together. You know, we're not going to get that middle or higher return of spend without that partnership really coming into fruition. And it's across, you know, planning policy, capital investment, seeing the Oxford Street District transformation actually happen rather than being talked about for the last decade. So I think it is predicated on getting some of those things happening on the ground to get us back to that 10 billion turnover. But, you know, all the indications are, and all the political support, whatever colour, you know, wants to see the West End be successful in the future. And certainly business does. And I have to say, there's been a real shift in demand of new types of brands wanting to be in the West End. And I think, to play credit to Westminster, without the city plan and their flexible approach and their real desire to see some change, I don't think we'd have that level of demand. So it's great to see that actually planning policy is driving capital investment and new brands coming to the area.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking to Councillor Matthew Green earlier in the podcast, and, you know, he was sort of talking about how sort of challenging it is at the moment, and, you know, the rise of the kind of candy store along Oxford Street. And in his view, that, you know, sort of short term view, and you know, should be looking at long term occupiers. And, you know, the full scale transformation of Oxford Street, I think, was how he referred to it. I mean, from your point of view, obviously, that is what you're driving at and what you're hoping to achieve as new West End company. What would your key asks be to not just Westminster, but to government, the GLA, in order to make this happen? Because, you know, one of the things I asked him was who should be responsible for trying to pull all this together? And I just wonder what your view is on that and what you think, you know, policy-wise, maybe what needs to happen.
Look, I think no one business owner wants to see the height of the candy stores around the West End. You know, we want high-quality entrepreneurial businesses. So I think we're all agreed on that. But there's some real fundamental issues still on cost. You know, the business rates are incredibly out of kilter with the real market. You know, £2 billion paid in Westminster. If you're a private owner of a property in the West End and you're facing millions in rates, or you get something in there that's going to sort of stop that bill, and you've got you know, a lot of debt that you're building in, you're going to have to be pragmatic in the short run. But I think long term, they want to know there is going to be public realm investment. We are going to see the Elizabeth line open. We're going to see a fundamental shift of the type of businesses in the area. That will give confidence, I think, for owners to take a longer term view and where the cost of rates. And let's hope Rishi really commits to what he said he's going to do with fundamental reform, so actually we can get it back to a level playing field with online and physical as well. So if we get that right and we think a medium term to long term view, it will be far better. But there is a market reality, I'm afraid, for the next couple of years where unfortunately we're going to see some short term and some pretty awful, I have to say, businesses in the area that we don't want. But let's hope that moves pretty quickly and doesn't stop our customers coming back to the area. And I think Westminster are right to call this out, but I think Westminster also need to get some spades in the ground with that public realm scheme that we've been talking about now for quite some time.
Absolutely. I mean, I suppose I'll just ask you one final question, which is, are you feeling optimistic for the future of the West End?
I'm always the optimist, and I think we've seen the worst. And I have to say, say. We have hit the worst. I think we have hit the base. And actually, this isn't just going back to pre-COVID, as many, I'm sure, colleagues have said and commentators in the past. But I do feel at every level of government, you talk to national level, the mayor's office, Westminster, you talk to the different owners, you talk to the businesses. There is a huge appetite to make a success of this and actually repurpose it for the next couple of decades and beyond. So I am optimistic, but we've got to see changes on the ground, you know, not just words, but actual action. So let's hope in the next year, when we have another conversation, Nathan, on this, actually, we've seen some real change physically to the environment of the area as well.
Absolutely. Jase Tyrrell, Chief Executive of New West End Company, thanks very much for joining the podcast.
Thank you.
Well, that's all from us. Thanks for listening to Poles Apart. Don't forget, if you like our podcast, then please do subscribe by searching Poles Apart from all your major podcast providers. That's it from us. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Bye, 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 bye.
Bye, bye, bye.